Blog Talk Radio.
We'll be right back.
my dark and gloomy ghouls and goblins. Welcome to Echoes in the Dark. Come, step through the mirrors of your souls and trade in those howling notes of forever, beyond the realms of reason and dying within those mystic veils of synaptic synchronicity, seeing sevenfold in open doors and abyssal nightmares, as that darkness ever waits to hold your hand and deliver you unto Lasciate ogni speranza voi che andrate. If you like the darkness, then you are on the right night, but please check out our other After Midnight shows. Sit in with Faziana and Babla tomorrow morning as they bring you and teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. On Tuesday morning, take a walk on the wild side. Now, these shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, come dine with us in the darkness tonight. Pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and Pam's a little froggy at the moment. Otherwise, she'd be leaving us. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How goes it?
All right.
Great intro you came up in that within that, like, 11 minutes. Very cool.
11 minutes? I didn't even have that much. Thank you very much.
Okay, whatever. You know, anyways, you would have had a lot more time if you had actually responded to the three messages that I sent you. But I will give you a well-deserved compliment in that, like, 5 minutes or so that you had, you came up with a great intro there, and I really appreciate you. Thank you. And and just to let you know, Robert is here with us. So welcome, Robert. Glad you could join us.
Hello.
Excellent. How you doing, Robert?
Oh, I'm okay for the moment. How you doing?
Good.
That's good. Sorry you're sick, Pam. And I'm here to try to alleviate some of that pressure, I guess.
Oh. Well, you know, I'm sure what would relieve that is like a nice back rub and some wine, you know, if you want to come floating by my window.
I was going to say, my arms aren't that long and my pockets aren't that deep, so going to have to settle for some well wishes.
well wishes and sympathy. Well, it's more than I get from some people, so I'll take it. Well, gentlemen, we have a great show lined up, and you know, thank you, Rex, for leading comments. Much appreciated, and starting the show. And a shout out, of course, to you, Robert, because while we have two contests for this show, the first one, the intro song that we just heard half of, because it's over 11 minutes long, and I only played 6 minutes of it, was suggested by you as a prompt. And it got a great response, quality and quantity. And that was Inamorata by Metallica, which actually translates from Latin into My Beloved.
Yeah, it was a very deep song. The video itself is very artistic and everything. So I figured it would be a lot of prompt stuff there. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. People were really able to dig into the meat of the song get something out of it. So very cool there. Hoping someday to write for it myself, but it wasn't needed and I'm not quite up to it. So maybe one of these days, but, well, I guess Rex, we can get the ball rolling whenever you're ready. All right. Well, because it was, your idea, Robert, and you shared a right with us that, you know, was inspired by the song. I am going to put that up, which is Tears of Twilight, and you are nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
This is my recital of Tears of Twilight. Sorrow, she had always been my faithful muse, the avatar of grief, a veritable virtuoso of the art of mental lashing, the insatiable mistress of melancholy. Our unison procured volatile pearls of Tenebris Hereth, each a concentration of beauteous anguish, pulsing and resonating with each thrum it wished to be set free. We twisted words to our will, bending poetry, distributing chaos like seeds of a sinful persimmon and a timeless odyssey. So there we were, my wicked mistress and I bathed in shadows. Each of her kisses was like a new pledge that choked my heart into sweet oblivion. 'Twas a match made in hell, seemingly a kismet of divine agony. After decades of torment, her hunger deepened. Tenacious fangs began to plunge nearly as deep as coffin nails, leaving me broken, withered, lifeless. A menacing macabre, savage and pugnacious, with me as her tattered puppet. So, in order for me to survive, in order for me to continue this life, I had to sever the strings that strangled me so. With what little I had, I cracked open my worn shell in desperation. The horrid banshee, misery incarnate, had felt the wrath of luminescence as the light of hope pierced her brittle heart. Loosing a final shriek of terror that sent tremors throughout my body, she shattered into millions of tiny tears of twilight, shards in varying shades of periwinkle. The petrica abound in the aftermath helped in easing the shock for the briefest of moments. As the light faded, I was left in the pit of teeming darkness. The damage had been done. My despair was the great catalyst in my poetic growth. In its absence, the corridors of my mind that were carved out by the tendrils of malignancy are now empty and barren. In the end, I had to auction off my emotions in order to sustain. The nothing I am now was a testament to the struggle that had found its cessation. In my chest, emptiness now resides. Seems that the perpetual puppet still must dance with merely the promise of brand new strings.
Great read, Rob. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. Much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Well, I think this was a perfect way to start the show. Wonderful performance read there, as always, Robert. Great use of not only the inspiration from the song, but the word bank from the contest. I always feel like sometimes word banks feel a little too forced, and this definitely does not. I really like and appreciate the personification of sorrow, and which fits well with the song and the title, me, which means my beloved, and all the way through great lines. But I especially like, so there we were, my wicked mistress and I, bathed in shadows, each of her kisses was like a new pledge that choked my heart into sweet oblivion. 'Twas a match made in hell, seemingly a kismet of divine agony. After decades of torment, her hunger deepened, you know, and all the way through, just amazing lines on being controlled by the sorrow within yourself, which creates some of the most ferocious or, you know, horrible heartache, but also some of the most beautiful poetry. So amazing write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Well said, Pam. Well, this is quite the word bank itself. I got to say, whoever dipped into this, made careful choices in the verbiage. You've got quite the note to offset thoughts like kisses, periwinkle, even kismet and virtuoso, as well as the dark angles with say petrichor, twilight, melancholy, macabre, tenebrous, pugnacious even, and even Horace from I think it's old Welsh for something nostalgic, for something that may never have been. So I like the fact that they were careful in the choice, and it gave you quite the idea to dip into because of those words itself. And you hit on that note right up front, sorrow. She had always been my faithful muse, the avatar of grief, a veritable virtuoso of the art of mental lashing, the insatiable mistress of melancholy. You set the pace right up front. And then down into the middle of it, you hit on, after decades of torment, her hunger deepened, tenacious fangs began to plunge nearly as deep as coffin nails, leaving me broken, withered, lifeless, a menacing, macabre, savage, and pugnacious, with me as her tattered puppet. And from there, you roll into the idea of survival, the giving up on that, and that breaking of the glass, shattering in millions of tiny tears of twilight shards in varying shades of periwinkle, the petrichor abound in the aftermath, helping or easing the shock of the briefest of moments. But within that, you've taken the essence of who and what you've become because of all those decades with that dark muse, that dark mystery note that walked inside. And it kind of leaves one as an empty note on the back end, yet it still leaves you with the bite at new strings and a new puppet to actually crawl back in, because something's got to fill the void. And without that that dark muse, something else has to creep in. Otherwise, there's nothing to hold on to. The torment begins anew in another form. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Rex. Yeah, we are all the sum of our experiences and our vices, I suppose. So, yeah, thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
That.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, back to you.
Up next, we have This Old House by Ryan Jeffrey Hayward. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please.
This Old House by Ryan Jeffrey Hayward. The old house, now left alone, I'm the last one left alive. I would slip my wrists, see you all one last time. I disconnect the home phone. I'm full of a lack of empathy. Inside, I feel like I'm dying. Lately, I'm running out of breath. What would I do to be with you in death? This world feels so empty, and my shadows so creepy. The rip will follow and catch me, as I hope with ease, like disease. Always thought that by drowning, easiest of death left easily, I had never been cared of dying, a death I can experience peacefully. End poem. And Robert, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, I think they nailed the prompt very well. In this one, they did it from the perspective of this old house, you know, left alone. I'm the last one left alive. I would slip my wrist and see you all one last time. I disconnect from the home phone. I enjoyed the second stanza, though, the most. I'm full of a lack of empathy. Inside, it feels like I'm dying. You know, the full of lack of empathy kind of reminds me of emptiness is filling me from fade to black, you know, to the point of agony. It kind of reminds me of that, which is it's a very ingenious way of putting it, to be full of nothingness. And I can also relate to it, where it says, lately I'm running out of breath. What I would do to be with you in death. The world feels so empty and my shadow so creepy. A lot of the times, you know, the shadows can represent more than just in the physical plane. I always often say that I'm in the shadows, which is in complete darkness, consumed by shadows. So I like the word choices that they used, and the fact that this is so relatable to so many people, and the language is simple, yet it invokes complex emotions. So I thought they did very well to the prompt.
Nice. Thank you, Rob. Pam, what about you?
Yeah, I liked the straightforward style of this, and yet it was quite deceptively simple and layered. I thought the old empty house made for a great combination of the reality of so many people whose children grow up, whose spouses die or whatever, for whatever reason, they find themselves alone. But it also made for a great extended metaphor for the emptiness that one feels inside. And I thought this was great all the way through, but what really grabbed my attention was that second stanza, which speaks in almost with the first line, I'm full of a lack of empathy, and the last line, and my shadow is so creepy, almost speaks of a fear of what one is turning into. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I do like the picture that Ryan offered up with this, and you can walk this as the house offering up itself, and it's dying moments, the thought of the old ghosts that haunt the place itself. But I do like that opening line, this old house now left empty, kind of a note to somebody getting on in age, the last of their line, knowing that nothing will be left once they've gone, and that willingness to join whoever went before them. And that's where that note in that second stanza comes. Lady, I'm running out of breath. What I would do to be with you in death and my shadows.
Are you still with us, Rex? Yep. Hello, is anybody with us?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm glad you are. Oh, that's good. Where's Rex?
I don't know. He probably got abducted again.
Probably. Aliens came and got him.
Mm-hmm.
Well. Okay. I think I may end up having to call him back if we don't hear him soon. So. Let's move forward, though. I'll go ahead and read this one, and then after I'm done reading it, you can comment. And if I have to, I'll call Rex back. We'll see what happens. All right. It is Mirrors Don't Lie by Ed Hunter, and it goes like this. Pictures capture smiles, but lies sound so beautiful. They make you believe. So I began to drink more freely, abusing myself with intent to forget. However, sleeping on a bed of nails makes it impossible to forget. The mirror doesn't lie. It doesn't care. It has no concerns or connections. It knows the truth and throws it back at you. And poem. And go ahead, Robert, and share your thoughts with our listeners.
Well, I thought that this was very well done. It's short and sweet, which I like at times, but I can also dig the longer writes. But this one encapsulated a lot because it says, pictures capture smiles, but lies sound so beautiful. they make you believe. But then it comes to the end where it says the mirror doesn't lie. It doesn't care. It has no concerns or connections. It knows the truth and throws it back at you. So you can jest or try and escape reality in a bottle or in any other way. But in the end, the mirror remains poised and remains indifferent and will always show you how bad things have gotten or how good things have gotten. But in this case, it seems as though over time he notices the reflection is getting worse and worse because he's getting worse and worse. So I thought that that was great, great for, especially for the length that it was. And it's eye opening. So yeah, very well done.
Well said, Robert. Thank you. Can I be heard clearly now?
Yep.
Oh, cool. And are we on Ed Hunter's piece, Mirrors Don't Lie?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I just read this, and it is stark in its voice. That notes the single double line. So I began to drink more freely, abusing myself with intent to forget. And that note of sleeping on a bed of nails makes it impossible to forget. Kind of hits on that note of self-flagellation, the willingness to punish oneself and making it worse by dipping deeper into the darkness and making it a bit worse by not just the abuse of mentality, but also abuse of drinking yourself into oblivion, so to speak. And that note to this last stanza, the mirror doesn't lie, it doesn't care, it has no concerns or connections, it knows the truth, and it throws it back at you. That's a horrifying note in that position, but it is also the truth in and of itself, because mirrors never lie. They might distort in the funhouse, but in the home, what you see in the mirror is what you get, and that is reality. And sometimes, many times, that painful bit of truth is that slap in the face. You actually need to reawaken yourself from the dilemma that you find yourself within. So nicely opted up there, Ed. Thank you. And Pam, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I thought this was just a wonderful brevity with amazing imagery and metaphors. It kind of reminded me of the poem The Mirror by Sylvia Plath. As you were saying, Rex, mirrors do not lie. And I really thought this was an excellent dark write on facing the truth of self in the process of destruction. Very well done.
Nice.
And...
Oh, and I see Naomi's on the board. Hey, Naomi, why don't you call in and give us a hand? Give Pam a break from speaking.
Oh, well, if she wants to, that'd be great. But I know Naomi has already been doing so much this week. She covered Art of Seduction for me yesterday, which was really nice. As appreciative of all right. And up next, we have The Devil Sups on Wretched Wine by Rory Deuce. And Robert, would you go ahead, please, and give that a read for us?
I'll try. Misery, she feeds me like bread from Jesus' hand. Lonely thoughts bleed red wine from grapes derived from sand. The mountains and the seas converged on distant shores. And misery, my old friend, is such a tasty whore. Gazing in the mirror or peering through the door, I catch a glimpse of demons never noticed before. I wink at reflections when smiling deep inside, then curse evil bastards causing havoc worldwide. Devils walk among us. They are many, not few. I don't know if it's me. I'm not certain if it's you. but our dance through the shadows always ends in hellfire. So one be the devil, the other be a liar. If I am such a beast, and some insist it's true, I'd cast out a wide net and come searching for you. I'd stare into your eyes as you burn on my coals, for you are another who devours the lost souls. Misery, she loves me. I chase her through the night. Devils hide inside us until we lose the fight. The pain becomes passion, the grapes no longer red. The wine becomes bitter, but it won't matter when I'm dead. End poem.
Great read, Robert. Thank you very much. I like the notation that misery loves company within this, and the twist in that thought, especially with the opening stanza. Misery, she feeds me like bread from Jesus' hand. I'm almost offering up that note of manna from heaven. Lonely thoughts bleed red wine from grapes derived from sand. The mountains and the seas converge on distant shores, and misery, my old friend, is such a tasty whore. That offering of how misery can be all-consuming to the point where you delve deeply into the its mix, live with it, sleep with it, taste with it, and eat with it. And that second stanza opens up, gazing in the mirror or peering through the door, I catch a glimpse of demons never noticed before. I wink at reflections while smiling deep inside, then curse evil bastards causing havoc worldwide. He then dips into the idea of that which walks amongst us easily, the evil that rends its way through the populace. And then he equates it to inside me, inside you. So there's that note of if you don't clutch onto the fact that, yes, there is darkness and light in everyone, there is evil as well as goodness in everyone. And if you, what you feed the most is what you get in the end. And that note to misery still walks itself down to the bottom end of this, because misery still loves company, and it will always welcome you to that open door. And it doesn't matter whether you're living freely or trying to live as such, but it doesn't matter a damn bit when you're dead. So the idea, you best feed those light entities rather than the evil end of things, lest ye be fall into a chasm, into the abyss that waits you as evil takes over. So I like that note. Thank you, Rory. Pam, a word or two?
Yeah, well, great comments there, both of you. I just really adored this dark poem. I gave it the gold in the contest, not only for its technical presentation with the brilliant rhyme and flow, but also because I felt like it was like such a spot-on reflection of the song without being a copy. You know what I mean? Like he caught the essence of the song, but put into his own words. I thought it was really an amazing write on a journey of darkness throughout the land, but also a journey of darkness within ourselves. I really like this all the way through, and I like how it speaks in almost like the devil's own, like the devil's own voice. But I especially like, if I am such a beast and some insist it's true, I cast out a wide net and some come searching for you. I'd stare you in the eyes as you burn on my coals, for you are another who devours the lost souls. And I like how that speaks in the idea of somebody pointing at someone and saying, you're evil, when really the three fingers are pointing back at them. So amazing dark right and very well done.
Thank you, man. Rob, you got to read it. What about you?
Well, I enjoy this a lot because not only does, you know, he point out his own sins or his own journey, but he's also pointing out the fact that, you know, the devils walk among us, say, hey, it's not just me, it's you guys too. So don't, you know, don't judge me for my deeds when, you know, like before when he says devils walk among us, they are many, not few. I don't know if it's me. I'm not certain if it's you. So, you know, that everybody carries the weight of their own sins. You know, everybody has, don't cast stones and all that. And I like the fact that he instituted that in there, but in like a subtle way. And if I'm such a beast, and if some insist it's true, I cast a wide net and come searching for you. You know, like people often like to judge other people. Even, you know, myself have been judged for they say, oh, you're feeling sorry for yourself because of all the misery or whatever. And it's like, you just don't understand sometimes what people are going through, you know. So why are you judging? You call me a beast, you know, and you're just being judgmental. So I like the fact that he points those people out and calls out that, hey, everybody's got their own shit, man. Come on. So yeah, and then misery loves me. I chase her through the night. Devils hide inside us until we lose the fight. That's very impressive in the sense that, like, yeah, the devils are in there and not everyone can see what's going on until we finally break, you know. Then we lose our temper, then we lash out and things like that, you know. And then the pain becomes passion, the grapes no longer red, the wine becomes bitter, but it won't matter when I'm dead. You know, so the driving force, the vice that he had, leads eventually to his destruction. But at that point, it doesn't really matter. So, I really like this one, and well deserved gold.
Great comment there, Robert. Thank you. All right, Pam, coming back your way.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right, up next. We have A Dirge for My Broken Heart by Jody Melton. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
A Dirge for My Broken Heart by Jody Melton. In the shadows of twilight's embrace, an amarata's melody whispers its mournful grace. A dirge for a love forsaken, a collection of despair, as stars above flicker, a cosmic affair. In the heart's deep abyss, where passion once reigned, now lies the wreckage of a love unchained. Promises shattered, dreams turned to dust. A once well-oiled machine of lust has now turned to rust. A scorned lover's call, a haunting refrain, echoes through the soul, inflicting pain. Lost in the abyss of longing and desire, in the Amarata's song, a funeral pyre. In the depths of silence, where shadows dwell, lies the broken pieces of my heart where I fell. A requiem for love that once burned so bright, now reduced to ashes in the endless night. In the labyrinth of memories, I am ensnared by the ghostly whispers of love's despair. Eager to love, a mournful plea to set me free from this dark reverie. But I linger on in the depths of despair, caught in the web of a love affair. I'm bound by a curse and a bane, forever haunting me in heartache's domain. So I drift through the darkness, lost and alone, memories replayed, a mournful tone, a symphony of sorrow, a song of the heart, stuck in an endless loop, tearing me apart. End poem. All right, Robert, what do you think of that?
I almost feel like I was writing this, because this sounds like me, what is it, like 10 years ago, which means I could really relate to it. You know, that's not an insult. It's basically like I really can understand the depths of heartbreak and all that. That's what's one of the greatest pains that we could feel, whether it be from loss of a friend or the loss of a lover, or just in general, like sadness has its ways of just decimating you from the inside out. And I think this really reflects that. And I like the intro. The intro is really good, and you did a good job of reading that, Rex. It says, in the shadows of twilight's embrace, in the Amarata's melody whispers its mournful grace, a dirge for a love forsaken collection of despair, as the stars above flicker, a cosmic affair. So, I really enjoyed this, and I enjoyed the rhyme scheme and the whole depth of the emotional depth of really, really digging home the effect that despair can have on a person. So, very well done. Good read, Rex.
Great comment there, Robert. Thank you very much. Joe usually walks at the more pleasant angles of life itself, love and all that. But this, you kind of hit this with like a duck to water. As you said, that opening stanza is a perfect lead-in to everything else, because he drops into the next stanza. In the heart's deep abyss where passion once reigned, now lies the wreckage of a love unchained. It kind of hits on that note, an unchained melody. In and of itself, kind of hitting on that note to Inamorata as being that mournful grace in that first stanza. And he keeps that note going forward. Promises shattered, dreams turned to dust. A once well-oiled machine of lust has now turned to rust. And maybe that note right there, a once well-oiled machine of lust, is the answer, because there wasn't any real love. It was born out of lust. So once the lust is gone, everything kind of rusts with it. Then that note to a scorned lover's call, a haunting refrain, echoes through the soul, inflicting pain, lost in the abyss of longing and desire, an Amarata song, a funeral pyre. Then rolling into that note of everything going up in flames, then the silence in that next stanza, the labyrinth of memories. This is the pain of hitting on that that love affair that kind of burned brightly, real quickly, then melted in its essence, and then both parties just disappeared from each other. And what lingers on the back end is the emptiness that comes with it, which is really definitely delved into with this piece. So nicely done, Jody. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, before I comment, I'd like to welcome Zach to the show. Welcome,
cool.
Zach.
Hey.
Glad.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
Did you get to hear that nice piece by Jody?
A little bit, yeah. I did get to hear some of it, and it reminded me of Rust Never Sleeps by Neil Young, because of his fascination with rust and decay and chemical transformation. But that's all I got to catch. I didn't get to catch all of it, so that's what I got from it.
Cool. Thank you. And back to you, Pam.
All right. Well, I thought this was really an amazing dark ride. You know, and it does remind me of Robert's style, I will say. I think he was right there. But I love the use of the word dirge in the title, a dirge for my broken heart. Amazing lines all the way through, great rhyme and flow, brilliant imagery and metaphors. And I like how it speaks on the idea of a broken heart calling out to love that has been torn apart, and great lines all the way through. But I do especially like, in the labyrinth of my memories, I'm ensnared by the ghostly whispers of love's despair, eager to love a mournful plea to set me free from this dark reverie. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Excellent. All right, where would you like to go next?
All right. Well, of course, you know how it works here. You call in and we put you to work right away. So with that being said, we have up next No Place for Irritations, and by R.L. Yes,
R.L.J.J.W. There's way too many consonants to actually pronounce this properly.
Okay, I'm going to say it one more time now that I know, because I think we're kind of stumbling over each other. By R.L.J.Z.O.W.R.J. And go ahead, please, Zach, and give that a read.
All right. No Place for Irritations. My feelings chooses to never romance with pain, with hate, with lies, with controversy, plus with misery on any romantic date, so that my love and my heart can heal all disasters in peace to prevent a gloomy soul from ever unfolding in my personality, because a gloomy place could escalate to replace my faith, because my faith is a serious drive, a drive I uses to dispute and against those terrible feelings that are always persuading me to turn to dirt for a research crutch. But no, my heart chooses to research on love, so that love can sweep all dirt away from my soul like a broom. But a witch's broom isn't ever welcome to sweep in my flesh, because the witch's broom has a wicked test, a test that's always scheming to ruin my positive quest. And poem.
Great read, Zach. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get first dibs at this one.
Okay. Well, you know, I liked the emotional impact of this write. I really like where he says, plus with misery on any romantic date. The idea of if you're going to date, if you're going to search for love, it shouldn't be a process that makes you miserable. I thought it was an excellent write on the energy of the energy of positivity and love in that spiritual battle between good and evil. So nicely done.
Thank you. And Robert, how about you?
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of that quote. I can't really remember it off the top of my head, but it says something about, of course, there's cracks. It's to let all the light in, you know, like there's cracks and it's to let all the light in. I thought that this was kind of like resonated with that in the sense that, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on and there is a lot of sadness, and but he refers to it as dirt, which is interesting. But, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff going on, but I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to choose my drive, and my drive is taking me elsewhere. And he chooses to fuel themselves with love rather than dwell and commiserate and, on the misery, which is takes a lot of strength if you have it, you know. Not everybody does, but this person is writing from a light point perspective, so hopefully they can achieve what they set out to do in that regard. And yeah, very uplifting and hopeful poem with the touch of the human condition, I should say. There you go.
I like that. Thank you, Robert. Zach, you got to read it. What about you?
I like the sentiment of like choosing the path of like not to confront people or non-violence and confrontation. I think that's what I was getting from it. And not to put every ounce of energy into like one thing. You kind of got to distribute it correctly. I think that's what I got from too. And you can't like devote too much energy to one thing or else you get burned out. I think that's what it's about.
Nice. Thank you, Zach. That opening I did like. My feelings choose never romance with pain, with hate, with lies, with controversy, plus with misery on any romantic date. And that's a positive note. But he also hits on the back end. But a witch's broom isn't ever welcome to sweep in my flesh, because a witch's broom has a wicked test, a test that's always scheming to ruin my positive quest. I'm wondering if he's had some run-ins with some witches, female characters, so to speak, that offer up that note of testing the man, the fortitude, his willingness to bend this way or that, so to speak. And maybe that is the idea of the screwing with, not playing out with the hate, the lies, the controversy, especially when it comes to the romantic end of dating. So it kind of hits on the idea of the perils of dating and what it entails. And you come across maybe too many that walk a different line that are trying to maybe control, maybe push buttons, or just offer up generalizations about this or these people, or bringing with them a heavy set of baggage they don't wish to deal with. So thank you, RL. And Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right. Well, up next is Friedrich's Niche by Eric Svensson. And Eric was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Friedrich's Niche. Supernova laughter exploded. Royal Rollick. Rock and roll expansion of humor. Pearlescent peals of hearty laughter shook planet Earth. Mirthful girth supernova expanded as never before. Gay, garrulous joy lit up the stratosphere. Ardent apostrophes, exclamation marks, commas without question marks. Eon's old eye twinkle thoughts tweeted into central galaxy command exploded. Supersonic release of postulant energy, all pent up trying to keep a straight face. Can-can, rip-roar Moulin Rouge style with supernova zebra zest. Earth divine comedy of errors brought tears of laughter to the quantum field. Ping pong adroit, rubbable light, frivolous humor called hubris. Black holes, audacious asteroids and space debris blew Daniel waltzed themselves away. Tilt, lift, eye blink swift, humor brought about the long-awaited shift. Midwife solar flares paved the pathway from the central sun for months. Merry millennium's gangly goose-step march arched the accurate moment for human hearts to fern unfurl. Stradivarius soul scrolls pegged and nuts recalibrated in eye blink nanoseconds. Royal Rollick, rock and roll expansion of sentient, soulful humor saved the day. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Zach, why don't we start with you?
Oh, I loved it. That first of all, the cover reminds me of an album from Thundercat, the bassist. I forget which one, but it looks really cool. And the poem really hit brings to mind Ginsberg and a supermarket in California or San Francisco. And it's like the celestial equivalent to that with all the imagery. Felt like Ginsberg's references to like fruits and vegetables and up and down the aisles. And this was like the space equivalent with all the space and terminology, and it has like a similar sort of feel to it. I thought that was really cool.
Excellent. Thank you, Zach. And Robin, how about you?
I always have trouble wrapping my brain around Eric's work, but I know there's some hidden nuances in there that I just can't quite my slow brain is turning to mashed potatoes, as we know. So you're going to have to give me a second to kind of develop my thoughts. Maybe yourself or Pam can comment first.
Okay, no problem. I'm going to go with that first. First, I got to hit the note with Friedrich Nietzsche, the note to Friedrich Nietzsche itself, but also offering up the note that this is Friedrich's place, so to speak. That first stanza is where I'm going to hit on. Supernova laughter exploded. Royal Rollick rock and roll expansion of humor, pearlescent pearls of hearty laughter shook planet Earth, mirthful girth supernova expanded as never before, gay garrulous joy lit up the stratosphere, ardent apostrophes, exclamation marks, commas without question marks.
and kind of hits on the idea of the Big Bang, so to speak. There isn't within this kind of almost that note to the internet, its first awakening, and then how it's blown up significantly. That thought to me, the exclamation marks, commas, and question marks hits on those, and the posture sits on those notes of how they're used in such a vehemency these days. What else we got here? Eons old twinkle thoughts tweeting that the central galaxy command exploded. It's how people are expressing themselves in such a manner. It can be virulent. It can be viral. It can also be funny. So you think of memes that go viral in a moment because all of a sudden you got this little eye-opening quirk that's expressed in the moment. Kind of like hits on that the can-can Rick Raw Moulin Rouge style with Supernova Zebra Zest. The idea of people offering up something humorous and funny in the moment. And then he hits Earth's divine comedy of errors, brought tears of laughter to the quantum field. The kind of the explosion of data and nonsensical data that streams, as he puts it, as audacious asteroids. You get some black holes, the sort of how all of a sudden some people find themselves in that black hole because they've been banned, so to speak. Anyway, yes, what else we got here? Merry Millennium, Gangly Goose Step March. That kind of hits me with the idea of how governments are now trying to range the thought of what is and what isn't allowable speech. The thought of quantifying their essence of what they want to see. In other words, they want the narrative of their angle rolled out, as opposed to listening to the very voices of those who actually do know some things. Yes, they're not allowed to speak. What else? Stradivarius, Soul Scrolls, Pegs and Nuts, recalibrated in eye blink, nanosecond. Again, that hits me with the idea of the note of the ease, the infinitesimal ease of being able to take those little notes within, Google, Facebook, and any of the other generated fields, all of a sudden they equate, this is allowable, this is not, words this, words that. It kind of hits me with the idea of how we're being turned out in voicings by having us being locked out of being able to voice. That's about what I got. And Robin, how about you?
Yeah, that's a good interpretation. I was now that I got to look at it a little more, my interpretation seems to be like I could picture gods or kind of like with the Divine Comedy kind of brought it to light to where it's like, you know, gods are just sitting there, creating the universe and supernova laughter exploded. They're just sitting there and it's like a big joke to them. You know, it's like nothing really matters. It's all chaos, but hey, let's enjoy the show that we create. And it could resonate with people too, because a lot of times people tend to thrive on sensationalism, and that could be another note hidden in there, I think. And because when you think of all the astronomical and the cosmic scale of it all, if you want to take it somewhat literally, then I think it's basically has to do with either the gods just joking around and throwing planets here and there and causing all kinds of untold destruction, and why, because it doesn't mean anything much to them, and or it could be like, as you said, and be on a more human level, and just to where it's very relatable in the sense that, yeah, memes are everywhere. Everything happens so fast nowadays, and everybody just needs it to be faster, fast, fast, fast. So, yeah, I thought it was good. Your interpretation was good, but I just threw out what I could get out of it. So I don't know. That's the beauty of the poetry and people like Eric who kind of really make you scratch your head and think about what you're reading. So, yeah, that's my thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't disagree with you. That's a great way of looking at it as well. So, great comment. Thank you, Robert. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, up next we have Misery Mine by Naomi Sarah. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
I'll try. Misery Mine. She hovers over me, sweeps through me. She hovers over me, sweeps through me, inhabiting my veins, siphoning the air from my blood, and I am left but a river in drought, a dying trickle moving listlessly over parched soil. Thirsting plants on my banks, wilted and weak, their shriveled skin yellowed and burnt brown, hanging achily to the ground. As I slowly turn to desert sand, sponging up new light, only to cast it out into a calcifying cold night, cracks growing deeper, splitting open, spreading wider, like an old broken face, baked hard, inhospitable, to delicate seeds as scorched rock. End poem.
Great read, Robert. Thank you very much. And Zach, why don't we start with you?
I thought like it was a very visceral piece, especially I think the most visceral part for me was the siphoning of the air from the blood, and that's what caused the drought, I guess, was the of the speaker, which is a very striking image. And it's just lots of earthy sort of imagery throughout, lots of dryness and being like cracking and breaking apart like blisters, and just brought to mind like very disgusting imagery. But I think that's what I was going for, so that was very well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Zach. Pam, you want to comment on this?
Yeah, I would love to comment on this. Honest to goodness, though, I'd love to comment on every poem in the contest or on the show, but unfortunately, as people can hear, my throat's not quite up to that. So, I gave this one the silver in the contest. As Zach said, it had extremely visceral imagery, which grabbed my attention and kept it. An amazing dark right that to me spoke on mind and body transformed in the drought of despair. I really thought this was great all the way through, but I like how they how Naomi used the idea of the drying up riverbed as a metaphor for all the joy going out of someone's life. And brilliant all the way through, but I especially like, as I slowly turn to desert sand, sponging up new light only to cast it out into a calcifying cold night, cracks growing deeper. Brilliant stuff and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. Robert, how about you? Since you got to read it.
Yeah, this is right down my alley. I really like visual poetry and metaphors, and the thirsting plant seemed to be a very good one. I didn't imagine it that way, but seeing the video and like recollecting images from there, it really kind of hit home to the prompt. Thirsting plants on my banks, wilted and weak, their shriveled skin yellowed and burnt brown, hanging achily to the ground. I can really understand that, because I used to write about sadness being like a desert, and this kind of reminded me of that, brought that sentiment out that it's like very, one, it's very lonely. Two, it saps your soul and it devastates you from the inside out, hollows out everything. That's why I like that shriveled skin line. And then at the end it says inhospitable to delicate seeds as scorched rock. Like there's nothing that can even help or like there's no seeds that can grow. There's no hope really to revitalize or to change anything because it's already destroyed and to the point of no return. And I really dig that. I can understand it. So yeah, great emotional and very well done piece, Naomi.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I guess I'm going to go with time and aging. It kind of hits on that idea of the shriveling up, so to speak, how the body gets to be desolate at some point in time. Because the last stanza. As I slowly turn to desert sand, sponging up new light, only to cast it out into a calcifying cold night, crackle growing deeper, splitting open, spreading wider like an old broken face, baked hard, inhospitable to delicate seeds as scorched rock. There is that note, it reminds me of how the Sahara was born, through the note of how the earth wiggles and then goes through that process of a 26,000-year cycle. And it doesn't take a whole lot of time to turn that expanse of all of the upper half of Africa into a vast desert. And it is that idea of age, and it creeps up on you, walks over you, and takes from you until you become that note at the bottom end of this, baked hard, inhospitable to delicate seeds, a scorched rock. The idea of finally becoming that note to what death is at near the end. Something old, ugly, scarred, and not quite the vision you once were. So it's both the note of the misery mind that you know it's coming, and yet you fight against it, yet it still comes. So nicely done, Naomi. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, up next, we have Venomous Snakes by, not Naomi, sorry, wrong person, Betty Page. And it goes like this. Vindictive heartbreak bitten by venomous snakes with no antidote. Numbing just like coke, elevated way too high, cruising without brakes. Vindictive heartbreak bitten by venomous snakes with no antidote. Drowned myself in booze, slithering voices mumble incoherent words. Vindictive heartbreak bitten by venomous snakes with no antidote. I don't care at all. I'm too wasted to feel love. He sucked it all out. Vindictive heartbreak bitten by venomous snakes with no antidote. Spit out to save me. Lingers lustfully within, corroded by sins. End poem.
Great read, Pam. A bit more dark than what we're used to from Betty. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I'll say. Betty is usually very, her poems are very vibrant and colorful and just like, this is very like stark and dreary, and like I said, dark. But hey, I'm all for it. You know, it's my thing. I do like the repetition of it because it really hammers home her point. You know, starting off with the vicious, vindictive heartbreak bitten by venomous snakes with no antidote, and then you go in between the lines, numbing just like coke, elevated way too high. Cruising without brakes, drowned myself in booze, slithering voices mumble incoherent words. So it's kind of like how we mentioned earlier about the vices. You know, everybody has their vices. Everybody tries to find their escape. You know, and the they got so damaged. Like, they keep coming back to it. They keep coming back to the damage, and what it's done to them. And it's the repeating. Sometimes it's a nightmare. Sometimes it's a it's just a PTSD. You just can't get over it sometimes, the damage that somebody can do to you. And the escapes sometimes, oftentimes, end up becoming very bleak and ineffective. And pretty soon it leads to, like, there's the point of no return. And I like the fact that she hammered that home with, and it kind of makes me feel like this the protagonist, the person in the poem, really experienced that level of terror or misery that is so relatable to people. And she expressed it very well in this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Robert. Zach, how about you?
I thought it was very cool, like a snake bite breakup, like poisoning every ounce of this person with intoxication of alcohol to the point of, like, saturation. And it reminded me a lot of, it's brought all the way through, reminded me of Apostles by Mobb Deep, the very end song off of Hell on Earth, all the way through. It just reminded me of that song, Snake Bites Without No Antidote, like all the way through. Very cool.
All right. Thank you very much. I think leading off with that note, That hits me with the idea of early on in life, even childhood, before rolling into numbing, just like coke, elevated way too high, cruising without brakes, kind of hits on the idea of being challenged and burnt at a young age, and it rolled into that note with the coke, and then the additional every other stanza walking that vindictive heartbreak. Bitten by venomous snakes, pours on that note. It's become a cycle, repetitive in nature, and it's being laid into with a note of adding just more poison into the veins itself. Then you hit the idea of drowning booze, slithering voices mumble, incoherent words. That's cold and rotten in and of itself, that third stanza, or fourth stanza. And then the back end of this, I don't care at all. I'm too wasted to feel love. He sucked it all out. There is a note to someone who's actually done something, illuminated the angle of where she's gone with this. And then to finish out, spit out to save me, lingers lustfully within, corroded by sin. Lingers lustfully within. Again, that note to something early, and the idea of corroded by sins also comes with that opening note of vindictive heartbreak. So something happened early in life which has brought out the heartache all the way through everything she's experienced along the way, and it's reinforced itself with each touch of a bite that's added a little bit more poison to the system. So nicely done, Betty. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right, yeah, and that was a wonderful write by Betty. And I do apologize, but I actually accidentally put the wrong poem up by Betty. That was for our second contest. So we're going to get two Bettys in a row, and I am going to blame the full cup of cold medicine that I drank today on that error. So.
You mean the one with bourbon in it?
Yeah, exactly. The extra large hot toddy. Yep, I'm going to blame that. So I am going to put up another Betty page, right, which is Dark Hearts. And Rex, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
All right. Dark Hearts by Betty Page. Pure silence, so cruel, seven my heart, bursts from chest, bright red splattering. Hauntingly wicked, reminiscing favorite kiss, eyes open, he's left. Wandered in distance, I still look for him daily, everywhere I go. 20 years or so, I watch as he lives his life, I wander alone.
Nose on a gypsy, who will love me? Tell me who, I'm always moving. Nowhere is my home. It's all right, though, it's all right. Sit alone each night. Gazing out windows that always let the rain in, cascade me frozen. I'm the walking dead. Bloodied hands, I'm turning blue. Too numb to feel love. And boom. All right, Zach, why don't you kick us off, please?
There's a destructive silence to the piece, like a gypsy sort of loneliness that's like traveling around and very sad and turning blue, just like almost to death with loneliness, with hypothermia almost. That dichotomy was very visceral. Too numb to feel love. Really? Oh, my God. I hope not. Well done.
Thank you, Zach. Robin, how about you? Doing back-to-back Betty.
Yeah. Well, back-to-back darkness, too, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Double
darkness.
Yeah, this hauntingly wicked, reminiscing favorite kiss, eyes open, he's left. So it's again with the he. It seems that there's a common feature in these dark poems. And where it says, I think Zach mentioned it. It's too numb to feel love. Yeah, I get that. I understand that completely because that's where I'm at. You know, all I want is no drama, you know, and I could figure that this is like, people who've been through so much, like Betty seems to have been, or she writes about is really a person who's been through a lot. And I really enjoy her poems, especially these darker ones, because it's a different side of her. And, you know, like the other parts of her poetry are phenomenal, and these are equally good, but they are just from a different angle, and I can really dig that. Nowhere is my home. It's airtight, though. It's airtight. Sit alone each night, gazing out windows that always let the rain in, cascade me frozen. You know, there's just so much, like, because she can go so colorful and you know, beautiful, and then she can go so dreary and bleak. So she has it at both ends, and this really resonated with me very much. And hit a lot of points that I can relate to, and I'm sure that many other people can too. So, yeah, thanks, Betty.
Excellent. Thank you, Robert. That opening note is kind of hits pure silence, so cruel. Seven, my heart bursts in chest, bright red splattering. And it hits on the idea of having the heart ripped out fully. But the pure silence, so cruel, also hits on that note of wanting that love, yet not being given, so to speak. And then stanzas where she, three stanzas, she walks with him again. Wandered in distance, I still look for him daily everywhere I go. 20 years or so, I watch as he lives his life. I wander alone. Knows I'm a gypsy. Who will love me? Tell me who. I'm always moving. That note of, it's almost kind of like a pass around, always moving, not satisfied with the moment because of that opening, but always looking for the joy in the music, but never really finding it. The gazing out windows, always let the rain in. It kind of hits me with the idea of tears, cascade me frozen. Right back to the heart ripped out, something icy, cold, and the walking dead, bloodied hands, I'm turning blue, too numb to feel love. Also walks back to the opening stanza, and it's on the idea of how icy that she's feeling in the moment. The blue blood hitting on that note of being cold. It's a visceral feeling. So nicely done, Betty. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Thank you, Betty, for sharing your rights with us. Much appreciated. And next we have The Spray Can by Peter Solway. And Zach, would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. The spray can. End of the ugly cockroach king. Stupid poem that staggers on and on. Hit it with a double dose of Vagion. Mortine all the same. Fountain of laboratory to flush it down. No author of Kafka, sonnet by Shakespeare. Oh, to be gone from midnight's kitchen, that cockroach king. Green aura, swimming, offspring abandoned. Sewer pipes to the seething ocean for that black, ugly thing. End poem.
Great read, Zach. Thank you very much. This is a little bit on the short side for Peter. He's usually got a loaded with references. Cockroach King. Well, you could walk that note to a politician, the need to get rid of one, getting rid of them or singularity, doesn't matter. Hit it with a double dose of Bagon, Mortine all the same. But and it offers up that note of a funny thing that cockroaches have been around for, 250 million years, and they've lived through everything. They never really go away. Can't get rid of them. And even if you crush them, if you haven't crushed them and then actually twisted your foot to make sure they're crushed, they come back. So the idea, green ore swimming, offspring abandoned, sewer pipes deceiving ocean for the black ugly thing, even the water doesn't actually get rid of them. So it kind of hits on the idea of we do what we can, but we're always left with a cockroach or two, and there's always going to be a king among them. Thank you, Peter. Robert, how about you?
Yeah, I can agree with that. To where it's it could be used to either sum up a type of people, even whoever they're referring to, whether it be politicians or otherwise. It's true, like in the sense that as far as just straight roaches are concerned, they could survive anywhere, anything, like even a nuclear explosion, supposedly, like they'll still be here in the fallout. So they'll just probably be a little bit bigger, and there'll be a whole lot of kings running around. But it's funny because now that I mentioned that, even it will be the same with people. Like if you're talking about people, you know, like after nuclear fallout, the cockroach kings of people will rise up. So I think this is one of those things that's multifaceted. Like it hits on a bunch of factors. It really goes where you want to take it, but the point remains the same in the sense of you gotta get rid of these terrible terrible people or terrible roaches, whatever you want to refer to it as. And I think that's an interesting way of putting it. So yeah, it's a thought provoking piece.
Excellent, thank you, Robert. Zach, you got to read it. How about you?
It reminded me of like the current environmental struggle that the world is going through. And because of that, it reminded me of the X-Files episode with the Fluke Man. And also it reminded me of 2006 monster movie Bong Joon-ho's The Host, with a monster going in and out of the Han River because of the polluted atmosphere of it. I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, yeah, it just kind of brought that to mind, especially at the end with the sewer pipes and the black ugly thing. I kind of saw that monster.
Excellent. Thank you, Zach. Coming your way, Pam.
All right. Well, a great write by Peter. And I would like to mention that we have moved on to our second contest, which is the song Cockroach King by Hakan. I highly recommend anybody who hasn't listened to this band, and particularly this song, check it out. And I do want to give a little shout out to Zach, because while I accidentally stumbled across this song, I shared it with him and I said, I'm thinking of doing a contest. And he said, that is a definite yes, Pam. So thank you to my friend Zach. Those little conversations stick with me, Zach. just to give you a little bit of an idea of the song, and it's too long for me to read all the lyrics, but here's some of the lines from it. The cockroach king sits on his throne with the Midas touch and a heart of stone, an empire built on guile and greed, a bleeding ground for those who heed. The grand illusion faded, the hunter snares its prey. I fear and loathe the cockroach, the mirage melts away. And there's so much more to the song than that, but that just kind of gives you a general idea of the deepness of the song and that there is a layered meaning to it. But it is interesting to see how people interpreted the song lyrics differently. So very cool. And let's see what we have next.
Yeah, there are some interesting lines in it. The cockroach king sits on his throne with the Midas touch and the heart of stone, an empire built on guile and greed, a bleeding ground for those who heed.
Yes, exactly. And I think, Rex, honestly, if you get a chance, you should check out more of this music by this band, because I think they definitely, especially lyrics-wise, have some stuff that you would find intriguing. So. And so up next we have The Cockroach King by S. Sharp. And Zach, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Sure. The floor, golden throne, my decor, sprays the corners along the walls. From sea to sea, the Cockroach King lays his eggs. Words of spite and division, mesmerized, we invite him in. He climbs the walls of liberty. No angels, gold wings. Just ask Mike Pence. He's just crossed the border, but that's a different fence. He lays his eggs in the floorboards, crevices between wants and needs. In your home, along the baseboards, the darkness of thought crawls. Turn on the lights. Watch the cockroaches scatter. Call the priest. Call the clergy. Call pest control with great urgency. Aborting right to deliver wrong. Right to freedom before it's gone. The Cockroach King has jumped off the boat at Ellis Island, the new red coat, with a flaming torch of orange hair. The orange coats are coming, I declare. And Paul.
Great read, Zach. Thank you very much. And Robert, why don't we start with you?
You know, I tried not to be specific as to certain politicians, but it seems that a sharp... he ended up going there, so that's very interesting. Way to put it. If it's from top to bottom, it's just like a diss track almost, which is awesome. And you know, his belly drags the floor, golden throne, my decor. You know, spray the corners along the walls from sea to sea. The cockroach king lays his eggs. Words of spite and division. So it's not necessarily like, you know, obviously actual eggs, but just planting seeds of doubt and seeds of chaos. And that's what I imagine a cockroach king would do as a, you know, human being, so to speak, is just kind of really sow those seeds and just chaos is like basically their calling. And the way that he kind of he weaved in and out of specificity, and then but layered it with like these awesome metaphor, where is it? Oh, call the priest, call the clergy, call pest control with great urgency. Aborting right to deliver wrong for freedom before it's gone. I thought that was very clever, considering what the things that are going on. And I can really appreciate this. I try to avoid political pieces because, you know, people are so divided. But this was genius. So, yeah, thank you, Sharp, for that.
Nice thing you said there, Robert. Thank you. Zach, you got to read it. How about you?
It was great. It brings to mind a lot of that political urgency that the world is going, or particularly in America, is going through, not just political, religious, I guess, a little bit of everything. It's kind of terrifying and funny at the same time, just much like that orange person, and his followers. But anyway, I don't want to get too much into that. But yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you, Zach. I agree with you, Robert. It is funny that he actually went specificity, but the funny thing, it's even funnier that you could point this at a number of other different people, from Macron in France to old what's-his-face up in Canada to even our own politicians, Schumer, and, a ton of other mainstream media, for that matter, for the division and the spite that's actually being drawn across everything. And the fact that, hey, if you open your mouth against something they offer up, you are a misogynist, you are an egotist, you're this is, that is, and every other is on the planet, until you've actually divided the entire country into little segments of what you want, people fighting each other. And that's the general idea of what's going on these days. All right, Pam, we're back on you.
All right. Yeah, I really appreciate Scott's take on the song. Just wonderful, entertaining write on the dark political landscape of society. Very cool.
Eric's got the good one there. Must say these cockroaches really inspired me. Here in South Africa, we have some mighty big ones. Hey, go to Florida. And they fly.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, we have the same, like, really big ones in Texas. There was one time one actually came running after me, making this high-pitched squealing noise. So I threw the giant family Bible at it, thinking that, you know, well, either it's going to get squashed by the Bible or it's possessed by demons. And, well, either way, you know, it did not, though. But, yeah, crazy
yep,
stuff.
Yeah, just got up and walked away. Ha! Ah, throw your guy at me. I'll get on you.
Irish Day.
Yep. Exactly. All right. Well, up next we have The Black Mirror by T. Perry 898. And Rex, I'd like to hear this one in your voice.
The Black Mirror by T. Perry. Softly. Softly calls temptation with a blackened heart of steel. He's a stranger. Would be tempted and enamored by the thrill. Who is victim? Who is hunter in this passion born of greed? Black deceit would come to flourish from its tiny shriveled seed. Treasures rise and melt with wishes like on those silent shifting sands. Hypnotized by ego's triumph, hatred follows where it can. In this quest of grand proportions, sword and fantasy collide. Who is the holy? Who is the evil? Is a thing I can't decide. Come behold the sinewed stranger, gaze upon the cockroach king, feast upon the hidden glories that this fantasy will bring. What befell the handsome hero would be harvest just reward. Did the evil forces perish from this blessing of his sword? He would scale forbidden mountains on a trip to hell and back. In his hands we see a dagger and a mirror draped in black. Did he flourish? Was he gifted with the kiss of endless wealth? Was the cockroach king a mirage, a reflection of himself? And boom. All right, Zach, why don't you start with this one?
Well, it reminded me of, Black Mirror. I kind of, like, connected that with the show, the Netflix show a little bit. I don't know if that's the case with this, but that's Black Mirror. Okay, maybe not. But I think I can see it a little bit. But mainly it reminded me of Percy Bryce Shelley, Ozymandias, throughout the entire thing with the desert imagery. And kind of, like, the same phrasing sometimes. So I really appreciated that. And I thought that it was an indelible piece with the cockroach conqueror going, doing his thing with, you know, conquering. Reminded me of Mad Max. I thought that was very cool.
Nice. Thank you, Zach. Robert, how about you?
Well, I First of all, I think he did phenomenal with his rhyme scheme, and he expressed quite a bit of very cool imagery, and very powerful and strong imagery. Like I can't get over the ending, the last stanza. He would scale forbidden mountains on a trip to hell and back. In his hands we see a dagger and a mirror draped in black. Did he flourish? Was he gifted with the kiss of endless wealth? Was the cockroach king a mirage, a reflection of himself? So to me, that's like, you know, all of these so-called points of valor were just, they're empty and hollow, just like, you know, like he is. It's basically a kingdom of found on lies and deceit, and the black mirror is a perfect thing to reflect it, because there's nothing there anyways. So I thought that closing was just like, you know, chef's kiss, was genius. And all throughout the poem, it's equally astounding. You know, treasures rise and melt like wishes on those silent shifting sands, hypnotized by ego's triumph. Hatred follows where it can. So yeah, that goes back to, you know, what we're talking about, like those people in power. You know, it's like hypnotized by ego's triumph. Like the people they seem like strong people, like seem like people we could follow, but all of their triumphs are just basically fallacy, you know. And this really kind of points that out and hammers it home. And I really enjoyed this one a lot. So thank you, T. Perry.
Excellent. Thank you, Robert. Because of some of the language he's gotten in here, especially like who is holy, who is evil, is a thing I can't decide. Did the evil forces perish from the blessing of a sword? So there's a quantifying note between those two lines, but that last stanza walks the a different note. Did he flourish? Was he gifted with the kiss of endless wealth? Was the cockroach king a mirage, a reflection of himself? But up top, it kind of hits me with the idea of what the Bible references, the coming of the Antichrist. He is seen as this emanating grand figure, his largesse and his love from all peoples walk a singular line, until all of a sudden everything falls on the back end and the sword that's wielded is not the one that's expected. I think that's where the back end of this kind of hits on the idea. Was the cockroach king a mirage, a reflection of himself? So it points back to that note of humanity and how they that one individual can impart such power in the moment over every part of the earth itself, that everyone across the world can look at and say, yeah. And they fold under his guise, and all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. Thank you, T. Perry. I did like that one, too. All right, Pam.
Yeah, I have to say that I have to give this poem a round of applause. You'll just have to imagine I'm clapping, but I'm giving it a round of applause because, yeah, just totally, totally awesome. With its rhyme, its flow, its imagery, the way it reflects the spirit of the prompt, you know, amazing, right? So wonderful social and darkness and commentary. So, very well done. And let's see what we have next. All right. I see our good friend Eric Svensson hanging on the board in LNP. It's so good to see you, Eric. Thank you for being here. And we got a poem up by you called Praying Methuselah Mantis by Eric Svensson. And he was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud.
Sorry to interrupt, Pam, but I have to have to go help. So I got to go for now. Oh. But it was nice meeting with you guys.
Yeah,
hey, Robin,
good to have
thank you for coming on board, buddy.
All right, have a good rest of the night. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Mom. All right, Pam.
All right. Here we go.
Praying Methuselah Mantis Red. Esteemed Methuselah Mantis, sat upon the Sphinx's head, vexed, hexed, and out of sorts, Mohawk upright, the ancient one twiddled historic deeds, fiddled fretful, prayerful feelers. He grave flanges lambasted, deconstructed stolid pyramid sides into roach pavilions, almost like in science fiction. Solid objects became liquid amber rivulets. Wheels within wheels whirled through Methuselah's astute mind, just like Ezekiel's eyes beheld in the skies one night. Heckled, the egregious avatar tried to hide, but oh, he was Jello Jekyll Jinx. You can choose your friends, but not your family. Polar opposites, but sadly related to the roaches, was his bloodline. Bohemian golden cockroach, his absolute antithesis. My Waterloo, Methuselah lamented, Mohawk a-quivering. Minute teardrops formed in his two large forward-facing compound eyes, trickled down to paddle in his three small simple eyes called ocelli. The whole darn world's gone to rot, hasn't it? Heart palpitations peaked his heart rate. Methuselah pined for the ancient Egyptians that knew his sentient bloodline were teachers of patience and wisdom that guided souls along their journey into eternal life. Not his wrong side of the railway track, roach family, though. Exasperated, well-heeled Methuselah opened his mouth wider than the mummy king's, sent helter-skelter F-bomb screams across the valley of the kings. Shudder, shiver, shift, siddled, slide, the sphinx sunk skunk deeper into harangued honeycomb in a sand. The whole darn world's gone to rot, hasn't it? Sick to the pit of his stomach, 10 tour guides and 9 tour nights hauled. Heatwave flanches blanched, but could not flamethrower extinguish roach-infested pavilion pyramid sides. More F-bomb volleys sent forth. My polar opposites, wrong side of the railway track family. The whole darn world's gone to rot, hasn't it? Praying Methuselah Mantis, read in 1968 in the New York Times. A nuclear war, if it comes, will not be won by the Americans, the Russians, the Chinese. The winner of World War III will be the cockroach. End quote.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciate it. And Zach, why don't we lead off with you, please?
It reminded me of... the narrative reminded me of like the Torah or the Bible crossed with like Dune. So that was, I just like to kind of like painted that setting and I kind of went with it. And further on down, it reminded me of with the F-bombs. It reminded me of with the Helter Skelter F-bombs, like Dr. Strangelove, Beatles. And so onward and upwards until, like, the survival happens with the cockroaches. I think that's what I got from it. Sometimes with Eric, I'm not always too sure what I'm thinking, but I think I'm going to follow that train of thought. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Zach. All right. Well, he leads off with esteemed Methuselah Mantis sat upon the Sphinx's head, vexed, hexed, and out of sorts. All right, the thought that he married Methuselah with the mantis, the praying mantis, hits me up with the idea of we're going biblical here, and not just biblical in the sense of the Bible or Judaism or Catholicism or even Islam. I think he's including all of them, since Methuselah is supposed to be the father of all three religions, basically. And Methuselah, if I remember correctly, the Bible says that he lived to be something close to 1,000 years old. So his reference to the note of family, you can choose your friends but not your family. The idea also hits on the thought of being unhappy with the family. And that kind of hits me with the idea of how humanity has walked itself out of faith and religion into such a parameter of this one, this one, this one, and this one, how they cannot walk along the same lines, even though the three main religions in the world all come out of one single arena, Jerusalem. So he offers up the sadness, though, and the note of the cockroaches on the pyramids is humanity breeding in the moment and walking that note of Babel, the Tower of Babel, building that note to inherit the skies just like the gods, and the gods having struck down the note of Babel and spreading humanity to the four winds with a few thousand different languages so they can't communicate and can't work together. But that note, keep going back to the cockroach itself, does walk on the note to humanity, but the back end, he also hits on the idea it's not the Russians, Americans, or the Chinese. The winner of World War III will be the cockroach, because, like the note is, humanity can't stand up to the note of nuclear ferocity yet. The cockroach has lived some 250 million years and has lived through everything, including meteor strikes, which blighted the planet of quite a few species in many points of this planet's life. So the whole damn world going to rot, it hasn't, yes, and it's done this before, as each empire has come to a point where it's crumbled because of the deceit, the sin, and the propagation of debauched ideas and mentality, decides to tear it apart at the seams. So nicely done, Eric. I like this one. Really like this one. All right, Dan.
Oh, I have to agree. This is definitely a brilliant one by Eric, and I'm so glad he was inspired. He said in LNP, he goes, F-bombs is a new word gift from Pam. I read that when I read this poem, because I remember our conversation when I mentioned that he had used some F-bombs. So I thought that was really cool. I mean, there's so much about this poem I think is cool, but unfortunately my throat is hurting too much, and I'm going to leave people, or try to at least leave thoughtful written comments. But I did really, truly appreciate him throwing the F-bombs in there. Very cool. Mm-hmm. And up next, we have Guided by Deceit by Manda Marie 84. And go ahead, please, Zach, and give that a read.
Sure. Okay. Guided by Deceit. In shadows deep, a lost soul roams. chasing dreams of gilded helms. Through the mirage of riches she'd stride, hoping to find solace, a place to bide. Golden promises, whispers of deceit, leading her astray, where sorrows meet. Yet, beneath the glimmer, a truth untold, a fractured spirit, a heart grown cold. Dazzled by illusions, she danced in vain, seeking refuge from life's relentless pain. Yet, in the labyrinth of falsehood she found, the emptiness echoed, a haunting sound. Illusions shattered, reality unveiled, a broken heart, weary and assailed. In the ruins of dreams, she stood alone, yearning for solace, a haven to atone. In the shadows embrace, despair entwined, but even in darkness, a glimmer can be mined. For hope, elusive, might still reside, a guiding star in a desolate tide. Hold on, lost one, to the threads of light, for in the darkest hour, a dawn takes flight. Life's tapestry weaves both sorrow and grace. Embrace the echoes. Find a new space. And Paul.
Great read there, Zach. Thank you very much. I like that note up top, guided by deceit. It offers up an implication of welding oneself to what's being delivered unto yourself, actually delving into the meat and potatoes of what you're being offered. And leads off with that. In shadows deep, a lost soul roams, chasing dreams of gilded homes. Through the mirage of riches she'd stride, hoping to find solace, a place to bide. Golden promise, whispers of deceit, leading her astray where sorrows meet. Yet beneath the glimmer of truth untold, a fractured spirit, a heart grown cold. Again, that note. Beneath the glimmer of truth untold. There is a quickness these days to sit there and listen to those 5 and 10 second blurbs, whether usually and most often taken out of context, and believing in them without actually digging into a story. People are on this timeline of ever breeding a notion of packing in as much as they can, yet not understanding a damn thing of what they're being fed. And it's right there, dazzled by illusions. Illusions shattered. All of a sudden, you find out the truth, and what you thought was real is unreal in the moment. But that back end walks right up again to the beginning. Hold on, lost one, to the threads of life, for in the darkest hour, a dawn takes flight. Life's tapestry weaves both sorrow and grace. Embrace the echoes. Find a new space. The idea is actually finding the truth and understand that even within the darkness, there is a light which offers up that truth, and it is imperative that you understand. The truth is there, but it is indicative of you of wading through the shit and looking at and finding what that truth is, not having somebody deliver it to you on a gilded platter, so to speak, and then you gobble it up like it was manna from heaven. For only you and you alone can find that note to what is and isn't real in daily living. So, nicely done, Amanda. Thank you very much. And Pam, do you want to offer up a note?
Well, I'd like to say that Amanda Marie 84 is a new name to me. I'm glad to see that she was inspired, and I hope to be reading more of her. Really an amazing dark right. And I do like, as you were mentioning, Rex, how it speaks on the idea of finally seeing the truth and realizing the sadness of the lies that you believed the whole time. There's some great lines all the way through, but I especially like illusions shattered, reality unveiled, a broken heart weary and assailed. Very well done. All right. I think we can fit in.
What about Zach?
Oh, it was fantastic. I got the idea. What was I going to say? It was going to it reminded me of parallels. Love is pain. It was very lonely, kind of going through it. the gilded like platters and stuff. It just like felt like a solitary journey. Oh, it reminded me of the spirit of the band, like one of my favorite bands, Guided by Voices. It kind of reminded me of their sort of philosophy, but like they just keep moving forward no matter what, and being resilient despite all the darkness and the glimmer that could be mined. To look for those threads of light despite the darkness that it overtakes. And I really thought that was cool. Sorry, that just regained my thought there.
That's cool. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah.
And Pam?
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and fit in one last one, and then we'll just have a few carryovers. And that is For What by Kane. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
All right. For What by Kane. From darkness's world of lust and greed, an angel weeps with broken wings. In shadow's edge lurks a swamp thing, a cockroach thief, knife point, hands in driven thrusts. Worlds shift. Once smiling, stars loudly scream. Slim silver's blade driven long shiny mirror's tip. Rage rips out your sparkling light. Slivered wounds open, unzip slits your fourfolded vest, heart poured beetroot drops so coolly from confines tin, soft discs, red blood splatters on white carpet. Breathe, an angel weeps with broken wings, from shadow's edge creeps and gone, for what things? For what? And phone. And Zach, why don't we start with you?
It was reminded me of heaven and hell, the old concept of heaven and hell, fallen angels and Lucifer, shifting worlds, kind of like heaven and hell trading places, very visceral, the beetroot drops, the bloody beetroot drops, greed, an angel, so that's sin. And from Shadow's Edge, for what exactly? What's all the point of it? I don't know, but I really liked it.
Thank you, Dad. I like that note in the second stanza. Was a world shift, once smiling, stars loudly scream, slim silver's blade driven long shiny mirror's tip, rage rips out your sparkling light. That slim silver's blade, references night, but it also hits on that note of the moon itself in quarter. And then opens again, slivered wounds open, unzip slits your fourfolded vest, heart-poured beetroot drops so cruelly from confines within, soft discs, red blood splatters on white carpet. There's a note, the soft disc kind of hit me with the thought of one spine. So that could mean a lack thereof. The slivered wounds open, unzip slits your fourfolded vest. That hits me with the ribcage itself. And the beetroot drops blood from the heart, from confines in. The chest is that third stanza itself. Greed and angel weeps with broken wings, from shadow's edge creeps and gone, for what things, for what? The idea of greed and lust is that note to wanting, but not really needing, or not having not taking into that note of wealth. You should live for what is needed only, instead of wanting what is not needed. That's my guess. Thank you, Kang. All right, Pam.
All right. Yes, I'm glad Kane, like so many other people were inspired. Great dark spiritual rite between the battle of good and evil and trying to figure out the purpose of it all. Great show tonight, Rex. And if you want to just go ahead and wrap things up, that would be great.
Oh,
all right.
Oh, boy.
great show, Pam. Yes, thank you very much. Robert and Zach, thank you for calling in. Eric, Rosie, Hats, Naomi, and that was all for the board, so thank you very much for all that. And we'll be doing what's left here, the last couple of rights on the next, we'll open up with on the break on through for next week. And until then, we will see you next Friday morning. Have a good night.
Thanks,
everybody. Thank you, Zach.